It's time for a special episode of the Culture Hall, recorded at a movie theater, which we've never done before, Chrissy. We'll introduce Chrissy in a minute, but just to give everyone kind of a picture of where this is at, it is at Jordan Commons, if you're familiar with where that is. It's in Sandy, Utah, and it's kind of like a secret room that I think that if you came to the movie here, you wouldn't know that it's here. Bunch of leather couches and then some cool kind of, you know, lime green couches. And it's a room that you have to know where it is in order to get in. And I'm sitting down with Chrissy Ross, who is the author of the book To Mormons with Love. And the way this interview actually came about, I bet you don't even know, do you?
I don't, no.
I mean, I obviously asked you, and then you said yes, but I think it was a Facebook ad. Did you guys have some Facebook ads for your book?
I don't know.
I believe that you did, and I went, that sounds interesting enough. So I clicked like, went through to the site, and I went, well, this is kind of an interesting story. We should have her in to talk with us. I wanted to make sure that I had a chance to read your book before we had you in, so you sent me a copy, and now I've since read it. Now I got to find something else to read while I use the bathroom. That's how I get my reading done.
I say it's a two-bathroom read.
Yeah.
It's short.
I don't know. I must be quicker. It was about a four or five-bathroom read for me, but it's a great book. Chrissy, for obviously if you've never heard of this book, is not a member of the church, and speaks about moving from out of state to high densely populated Mormon country and all of her experience being here. So thank you for being here, Chrissy. Mm,
thank you for having me.
First question that I have for you is, why is it Chrissy with only one S?
I misspelled it when I was in kindergarten.
No.
Yes, I did. My name was on the front of my desk and I leaned over because I wanted to learn to spell it on my own and I left an S out.
And so you've just kept it since then?
I have, yes.
But the original name from your parents is?
I'm Christina, actually, from my parents.
Oh.
So Chris and Chrissy are nicknames. But my husband's name is Chris, so I go by Chrissy with family and close friends.
Just one with a Y, one without a Y.
Correct.
Cool. And so give people kind of the frame of the story. You moved here to Utah from?
From Colorado.
Okay.
Almost 11 years ago. And it was for a job for my husband. Mm-hmm. The man he had worked for in Colorado happened to be a member of the LDS Church and came back to Utah for a job and said, hey, would like for you to come here. This would be a great company. We'd work well together. So that's how we ended up here. Mm-hmm. It was for a job transfer. My husband and I have both lived in religious melting pots, so we thought we knew who Mormons were and what the church was about, generally mm-hmm. speaking, and sure, we'll go to Utah. Sounds terrific. So that's how we ended up here.
And you ended up here. So you lived in Colorado before. You said melting pots. What other places did you live?
I've lived in Kansas City, Arizona, Indiana, Texas.
So literally kind of all over the place.
Yes.
And you'd had obviously experiences with the LDS Church before. Friends or how did you?
Yeah, friends. My high school experience, I went to 2 years of high school in Phoenix, Arizona, and 2 years in Texas. I graduated in Texas. But the high school I went to in Phoenix, Arizona, and my eighth grade experience, kids, there were a lot of LDS kids, Catholic kids, Jewish kids. Mm-hmm. So I had friends who were LDS, went on missions, wrote me letters in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So pretty immersed in it then. I would think that most people would say, you know, I knew that the kid, you know, the folks down the street, they were Mormon or, you know, that kind of thing. Not so much that, you know, there's not a lot of experience where people are like, yeah, someone wrote me while they were on their mission.
Right. Correct. Yeah. So, that's probably fair.
So you moved to Utah County. Are you going to tell us what city or are you going to keep it Mayberry like in the book?
I live in Alpine.
Okay.
Okay.
So for people who don't live in Utah, Alpine is about, what would you say, realistically? I know in the book you say it's like 98%.
It's a lot. I would say it's got to be 95%+ LDS.
Really?
Do you think? Have you been down there?
I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I wish I could, you know, look at people and be like, I kind of have MODAR. That's what we call it. You know, being able to tell if someone is Mormon or not.
I kind of feel like I have that too.
But, you know, sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I like that I can do that, and other times I think I'm a horrible person for assuming one way or another.
You don't want to stereotype.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I would say at least 90%.
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
And so you guys end up in Alpine.
Yes.
And quickly discover that it's a lot different from how it had been, you know, just meeting these folks in Phoenix and members of the church in Kansas City and everything like that. Talk a little bit about the experience once you moved.
Well, it kind of snuck up on me. We plopped into Alpine. It's gorgeous.
How did you end up there? Was it because of the landscape?
primarily, my husband's job was in Provo, and we lived in a Castle Rock, Colorado, and it's very hilly in Castle Rock, and it's very pretty. My husband and I both, I don't mountain bike anymore, but just because I'm busy, but runners, trail runners, mountain bikers, and Alpine is gorgeous, and you have access to trails and clean air, and it had this sleepy bedroom community feel. We had been looking north of Point of the Mountain and Sandy, because everyone said, oh, Sandy, you guys would like Sandy, but we just didn't find anything in our price range. So we somebody suggested Alpine. Oh, you guys are so outdoorsy, you'll like it. Well, what's not to love? You know, you drive around in there, it's beautiful. And we were also told it was a little more diverse, which was a total Pinocchio lie from somebody. It's not religiously diverse anyway.
Maybe diverse between outdoors people and indoors people.
Yeah, some people have four kids, some people have seven, you know.
Or maybe people took diversity. I know there's a lot of plastic surgery in Alpine. Maybe that's what they meant by...
Oh, no, no, no. I don't know about that.
I know a few statistics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Oh, we'll have
we can talk about that another time. But they so people get you in their understanding that it's diverse. Okay.
Yeah, and I still expected it to be... We're in Utah, so I expected there to be, you know, a lot of Mormon people and Mormon families, and that was okay with me. I'm kind of old-fashioned, and not that all Mormons are old-fashioned. See, there I go stereotyping. But
no, that's
fine.
I like to think that Mormons live in 1950, which is cool.
It's awesome. You know, Dick Van Dyke, let's go. The but I did think that I really, really thought that I would have a wine tasting club again.
Like you did in Colorado.
Like I did in Colorado, and other places. And no, as we lived there, it became clear to me I didn't meet one other non-member for, oh, I don't know, 2 years. One man in our neighborhood was a non-member, but his wife was, and he was busy.
Yeah.
He was bringing home the bacon and stuff. So I don't know.
Plus, it was probably pretty weird if you sought out gentlemen. Hey, you were alike. Want to hang out?
It's not appropriate.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
My husband wouldn't like that. So, yeah.
So, why the book? I think it's kind of like a guide to, that's how I kind of took it almost, is a guide to people who might find themselves in a similar situation. I mean, you say the title of the book is To Mormons with Love. So it, you know, given that title, like I kind of thought that it would be more like, hey, you know what, this is how you can treat us different. And to me, I almost read it and went, you know what, if you're not Mormon and you're moving to Mormon, you know, central, wherever it is, doesn't have to be Utah, though I guess most people would assume it would be. It's kind of like a be prepared for this. This is going to happen. This is what happened to me. Look out for this, that kind of thing. So how come the book?
The book was because I really started feeling tender. It's actually kind of a love letter to my community, if you take it in the whole project in total.
Okay.
And there's self-deprecating humor in there.
Sure.
And I do have a confidential to members section. Like if you have a non-member in your area, this, because I felt like a missionary opportunity all the time. And that was my bad. Usually some people I certainly was, and that's real. But a lot of times, I mean, I was just suspicious of anybody's attempt at friendship and I didn't need to be. People really just wanted to be my friend. And, and it's also about fair-mindedness. But I wrote the book because it really was important to me. Just to talk. I wanted to, this religion just consumed me. I wanted to read about it. I wanted to understand it. I wanted to talk about it. And some people enjoyed that conversation and some people didn't. And writing it down, that was, you know, even if 10 people read it, that's okay. But, and it's also about fair-mindedness. I learned about myself that here I think I'm open-minded and fair-minded. And I went through a period over the past almost 11 years where I became kind of hostile and aggravated at a whole group of people.
Why?
I think I was going through culture shock, and that's what it says in the book. It kind of snuck up on me, but I was experiencing classic symptoms of culture shock. And even though it's subtle, we all speak the same English language where I live. And it wasn't just Alpine. People who've read my book are like, is she talking about me?
Yeah.
I draw
Hey, on page 32, am I that guy?
Yeah.
Is that me?
I draw my experiences on even some of my husband's colleagues and other LDS friends that I have outside of Alpine. So this is not just about my neighbors two doors down or right.
Although I bet
me.
That would be an interesting situation, because I bet there's some that heard, oh, she's writing a book, and then read the book because they want to be supportive, and then go, Oh man, am I, you know.
But it's, there's nothing ugly in it, would you agree? There's nothing controversial.
No, but there are things that I'd be like, oh man, did I do that?
Yeah.
Was I that guy that did that to her? Just talking about, like you talk about, you know, sometimes feeling like maybe you're a project or something like that. I mean,
right.
So you put the whole thing together, put it out kind of as a love letter, like you said, to your neighborhood. And then is the hope. I mean, because now it seems like. With at least media here in Salt Lake, you kind of are becoming more of the, hey, she gets how Mormons are, but she's not Mormon.
I think that there's still a member, non-member divide. And maybe it's not just in Utah. Like looking back, I have a friend who was living in Mesa. She has since passed away. But and a lot of her neighbors were LDS in Mesa, Arizona. And she received tremendous compassion and that neighborly love and support that has become synonymous with being a member. There's just people walk the walk when they're a member of the LDS Church, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, that's my experience. And I think it's a lovely, wonderful, admirable thing. But I think there's a divide and segregation occurs. And the more I look back on it, I think it's less about religious differences and more about just human frailties or our own personal failings. When I look at the member, non-member divide, and it could be any cultural or divide, the people standing the furthest away from each other are carrying their own baggage of hurts, misunderstandings. You know, they're not willing to bridge a gap and seek to understand or really nourish all of their virtues, with love being the overarching virtue, right? If there's ribbons that run through all of us that are common, and I think it's important for more people to find those, and I think a lot of people give that lip service.
What do you think would be able to? I mean, you kind of speak about how love could be the overarching bridge that would bring all the folks together, but are there other things that you think that members and non-members to kind of bridge that gap could do?
Kindness and communication. I talk in my book about communication, trying again, making multiple attempts at seeking friendships or building relationships. And I talk about if you when you go in for a kiss, if you bump noses, what a shame it would be if you didn't try
again.
No, that's
it. You're done.
It's
not worth it. She went the wrong way.
It's not going to work.
You lean right.
Well, you know, there's a payoff if you keep trying and sometimes subtle tweaks. So, and communication is hard about basic things. But I think if you're communicating from a space of sincere kindness and compassion, there was an article in Deseret News this weekend, and I printed it out before I came because
Grab
I'm going to butcher it. Hamblin and Peterson, reading other people's scriptures requires sympathy, not just facts. They're professors at BYU.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you read them much, but I loved this article because in my book, I tell non-members, read the Book of Mormon. You know, if you want to, that's how I started going to Mormon.org and reading, because I would ask five different members of the church a question. It could be something very small or it could be doctrinal, and I would get slightly different answers.
Sure.
And so I just wanted to understand for myself. And in this article that was in Deseret News that you all should read because it's fabulous, they talk about how when you're reading other people's scriptures, don't just read it as like religious literature, but read it as a sympathy. You know, you want to understand truly where their feelings and their beliefs are coming from. And I don't know how I want to phrase this. I feel like as a non-member and friends that I know who are educated and not members can have a little chip on their shoulder when it comes to the LDS Church. Well, they might read other faith scriptures, whether it's the entire Bible over all of Christianity, even the Quran, just anything, you know, pursue Buddhism, but no one will read the Book of Mormon.
Why do you think it is?
I don't know. I don't know. Do you have an opinion?
I have thoughts. I mean, I think that there's a lot of, we have missionaries that are pretty active about trying to get people to do it. And I think, I guess my immediate thought would be human nature is anyone who wants me to do something, I'm not going to do it because someone wants me to do something.
That's a good point. I was at a fireside recently and we were talking about return missionaries and how, gosh, if they're going all over the world and they're coming back, but still conforming to a culture that doesn't seem as inclusive as it should be, doesn't that seem, that's counter, that's not how the mission that shouldn't bring them home that way. And right. I said, well, that's not my experience. I'm sure there are return missionaries who bring that attitude back. But my friends, and I don't have a ton, but the return missionary young men and women that I know come back glowing brightly. You know, they bring what they've learned from the world, mm-hmm. and they're doing a better job of glowing, and they're not that bright headlight that makes people turn away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I think the youth in the church are very hopeful, and they're still devout, and
sure.
it's lovely.
You know, it's an interesting thing too. We talk a lot about here in the Cultural Hall about almost that there's generations within the church.
Definitely.
And how the older generation and the younger generation are almost, to some extent, not even the same church. I mean, doctrinally, we're the same.
Culturally.
But culturally, it is, you know, people of, what do you call it, Generation Y and younger seem to be very accepting towards a lot of things, whereas you get the older generations, baby boomers, et cetera, who are just, nope, that's not going to be okay. We're not going to. And I wonder if that won't help to bridge some of the gap between, just between members and non-members. Because you were talking about it, and I think sometimes behaviors can scare people. Like, for example, you mentioned in the book that you like to drink wine, not, you know, no sort of imbiber, but it's something that you partake
of. I enjoy
of
a glass of
yeah,
wine
exactly.
once in a while, yes.
I think that some people would say, well, if I hang out with that person or if I'm seen around that person, it's one of a couple things. One, I might be seen that I'm doing that as well. Or two, that it might say that I am okay with that. You know what I'm saying?
I'm condoning
that that's an okay behavior. Whereas, you know, Mormons, we don't drink. So I think that in that kind of older generation, there's that stigma of, you know, you stay away from it, the very appearance. Whereas I think in reality, in order to be able to love everyone, you have to be accessible to everyone. And I think that's kind of where a younger generation comes in.
You know, that's interesting. You talk about the generation thing, and it brings me back to how it's personal failings that cause things to crumble a little bit. At the same fireside, two women generously shared, they were both the same age, probably, if they're listening, I'll feel bad if I get this wrong, probably in their mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
One woman's experience, she said, you know, as I was growing up here, my mother and father discouraged me from playing with kids who weren't members of the church.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I don't know if she was afraid I was going to get unconverted, but I just had this almost fear of, oh, I just don't do that. This other woman, same age, same generation, shared an experience where she goes, gosh, my mom, it just wasn't an issue in our house. She never asked what faith, but now she was raised in another state. She was raised outside of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, my mother, it just wasn't an issue who I played with. We fed everybody who came to our home. I wasn't ever asked, is this person Lutheran or Catholic or Jewish or agnostic or LDS?
Mm-hmm.
And it just two different individual backgrounds. Is that has nothing to do with doctrine. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so if somebody has an experience with the first woman and that taints their entire, oh, Mormons don't socialize or
yeah.
play with anyone who's not a member.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of where it gets down to the cultural Mormons as opposed to doctrinal Mormons, which again,
the culture is a religion.
Yeah, to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to hear you talk about, I read the Book of Mormon and I go to Mormon.org and I was at this fireside the other night. One of the things that I thought was really humorous about your book is that you talk about this idea of, I think it was your father or maybe it was your father-in-law who says, hey, you should be a Jack Mormon, yes. Join. So then you're part of it and then just don't do it.
Yeah. He's still on that. Yeah.
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 Have you ever thought about it?
Being a Jack Mormon?
No, or just being a Mormon in general.
Has
there ever been a time where you're like, you know, maybe, or is it always just kind of been this kind of separation between you and all that?
You know, it's interesting you ask that. As a really young person, probably when I was in high school, I had a Mormon boyfriend. I mean, we didn't even hold hands. We were like 15.
Yeah, we don't do that.
I know.
Yeah.
But you know, had he been Catholic, I would have wanted to be Catholic. So not really knowing anything about it, any boy who, you know, kind of made my heart go pitter patter,
mm-hmm.
I'll be what he is, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, it's yeah. nice. They're clean. They have, you know, short hair. It's cute. So, but I'm 46 now. That was a long time ago. You know, no is the answer. I have not, considered, I have been baptized, as a Christian,
uh-huh.
And that's even kind of personal because now I refer to myself as a quiet questioning Christian.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. But yeah, So the answer is no, I have not seriously considered.
Because I think that there would probably be people who would, as they, as you continue to go to these things, I would think that...
they think I'm going to convert.
Yeah, maybe. Kind of encouraged by it. She's here again.
Well, I'm not trying to lead anybody on.
Certainly
and anybody
not.
Who knows me very, very closely knows that probably is unlikely. I guess you can never say no. They say never say never. But and I get a little uncomfortable when conversations go this direction because
sure.
I've had friends say, well, what did you think? And no matter what that friend says or what I say, no matter how objective I feel like I'm trying to be, I feel like the conversation takes a tone where it feels like they're trying to talk me into something and they perceive that I'm trying to talk them out of a belief, which I am not.
Right.
That is not what I'm about. I respect and honor all of my friends, and the one my friendships are a gift. And it's funny, if you line them all up, there's a Hindu woman, there's a Jewish woman, there's an atheist, there's mm-hmm. Lots of LDS friends now because I live here in Utah. But again, the common thread is these are all people who nourish virtues and walk in kindness and harmlessness and compassion, and that's what it's about at the end of the day for me.
What do you think for members of the church here in Utah with non-member friends and such? I hate using that term, friend or friends of other faith. That's my also favorite.
It's a member state.
Biggest piece of advice that you would give members of the church and how to treat their neighbors. I mean, obviously, you're going to say treat them kind and treat them like everybody else. But I think there is, and perhaps in a way we can't describe, a desire for people to know the gospel. It's something, especially returned missionaries that go out and teach and literally see how the gospel can affect people's life, to then come home and have someone right next door who, is not a member of the church. It's almost a balancing act, because we certainly don't want to be like you say, here, push this, and here, what do you think about this, and how, but what kind of advice do you give?
It's difficult, because the cornerstone of the church is missionary membership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think non-members have got to understand that this is a two-way street. Non-members have really got to understand that really does come from a loving place and an honest place if somebody does proselytize. But unfortunately, I think a lot of non-members just might feel offended or irritated, like, please, I'm an adult, we're neighbors. I think when you live in a neighborhood, I say let the missionaries do the mission work.
Mm-hmm.
Because as adults cohabitating on the same street where what we have in common is a safe neighborhood to raise our children or our pets if we're childless, or just to live and have a barbecue in the backyard or watch fireworks on the 4th of July, we owe each other common courtesy and mutual respect. And recognizing missionary membership is very real, there's also a way to just glow and not be, like I said, that the bright light headlight,
sure.
which makes people look away.
Yeah.
And you know what? Just be sincere in making friends. I've lived in neighborhoods where I have great neighbors, but I might find one or two gems of true friendships that to this day we still exchange Christmas cards and emails from the different places that I've lived. Churches we've attended, I can't say that I'm super close friends with all the... And also, having said that, and I know I'm not saying anything that your listeners don't know, but with the LDS church being, it's such a lifestyle, there's not a lot of room. And I say that when I finally realized in my book, I was lonely, but everybody's dance cards were full.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything personal that
it's
they didn't like
callings.
Me.
It's all our callings. That's the thing.
Yeah, everybody's busy.
We got stuff.
And families.
And the 30 kids we got.
Yeah.
And our two 15-passenger vans.
Right. And that's all important stuff. But just recognize that adults just want to be, it's hard if you feel like people are just trying to change you.
Yeah.
And if to use your example, if we're neighbors first, I think. And Mormons might say, no, you're missionary.
And it's just like with even, if you look at it like a relationship, like a husband and wife, a husband or a wife may in fact change, but they're not going to change because every day you woke up and said, hey, I really would like you to change. Hey, that change I want you to do. You can change that. How about changing that? That there is that change that occurs. Let's ask you this: what's up next for you?
As far as writing,
as far as what life is doing for you. I know you've been doing since you wrote the book. and maybe beforehand, because I was a little rough on timeline. You've been doing some TV stuff.
Yeah. So my little book, I'll put it on the shelf, literally and figuratively. Like, okay, that project's done, tied up in a bow. Mm-hmm. And then I've really done no marketing. It's been a word of mouth book, which has made any response to it very meaningful. Proceeds from the book have benefited the Timpanogos Arts Foundation, which is a nonprofit. So I didn't want people to think I was doing this to get rich, because mm-hmm. very few authors get rich anyway. Yeah, it's a big myth.
Yeah.
I just did Mormon Times last week, and mm-hmm. MormonStories.org sure. is reviewing the book this summer. And I think it's not literary genius, as you know, but it's a lightning rod for discussion. People kind of want to talk about this. But we're down to the last 25, 30 copies, and I'm pinging Deseret Book to see if they want to either reprint mm-hmm. first edition, or I'm open to doing a second edition, adding some additional content, rounding out some chapters, and creating some discussion questions for book clubs. I do a lot of book clubs. People, mm-hmm. it's a great book club book. But so that's the Two Mormons with Love thing. But I'm also working on a novel.
What is it called? Or what's it about?
Whatever
you can tell me.
The working title is... I don't know. Can I say sperm on your show?
Sure.
A sperm donor, a nanny, and a cat named Amiga. And it takes place in the 1970s. And it's contemporary fiction.
Oh, cool.
There's a grandmother who's dying of pancreatic cancer. And she's got kind of a train wreck of a daughter who's married to a kind of a yo-yo.
Hmm.
But anyway.
And is that something? Is this book, To Mormons with Love, more something that you've always wanted to do? Or that's more something that you've always wanted to do?
You know, I'm not very good at fiction, I'm finding, and I'm rewriting. No, it's hard.
I'm sure.
And I was a tech editor for years for an airline. I really like the personal essays, and I love I love human beings and what makes them tick and what makes people... I like pondering that and understanding it, but I'm kind of driven on this novel right now. But cool. But I could sink my teeth in the second edition. So if anyone at Deseret Book is listening.
We do have a few that work at Deseret Book that listen
to
it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Before we let you go, what's your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith? I would just say I have, as do my husband and sons, just knowing that God is there.
And then where can people find you? Website,
Chrissy,
Facebook,
ChrissyRoss.com. And on my Facebook page, this is new for me, but I've kept it closed for a long time. And mm-hmm. I finally just added the little icon on my site, which is ChrissyRoss.com. So we can be friends now. I've got to get all those bathing suit. No.
Yeah, I got to take off all the family photos.
All the
bathing suit.
I know, yeah.
And is it for the website, is it C-H-R-I-S?
Yep, one is ChrissyRoss.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for being here in the Cultural Hall with us.
Thank you.
We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. And in the meantime, we should say you can find us always at theculturalhall.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @theculturalhall. Find us on Facebook. You can always contact us, and we can put you in touch with Chrissy if you can't remember that or don't want to go back and listen to it by going to theculturalhall.com and clicking on contact us. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.